You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 322 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, and joining me for this Friday episode of the podcast, the great Chris Barnwell of CBS Sports. What's up, Chris?
You're coming up on a full year of podcasts. 356.
Yeah, we are. We started last July, obviously, with not doing seven full days, not doing seven per week. But yeah, we're getting up into a number that will fill a whole year. So yeah, we're closing in on it. How are we feeling, man? It's been a while since you've been on the show.
It's been good. I've been trying to survive what's been kind of a weird season. Like, I've enjoyed the season, but it's a little... I've been doing power rankings this year, and...
Me too!
it's a weird year for power rankings, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It's
the middle is just, like, stuck together, and none of them... And they all refuse to be better than... Like, the Wolves have finally kind of separated themselves, but everyone else is just like, no, we're kind of content being... just mediocre enough to be with everyone, but not like questionably better or worse.
Well, there as of right now, as we record this, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. There are 11 teams within between 19 and 22 wins. So that's just absurd. A little bit of a snapshot. That's just the middle, and then you have other tiers predefined as well. So yeah, it's been pretty rough. It's almost like you have to do like. It depends on what day you do power rankings on, because like I know yours, you do Sunday night into Monday morning. Is that what your schedule is?
Yeah, they go up on Monday morning. And
mine
I
are
usually,
Monday night, right. Tuesday. So
it's one of those so they can vastly differ.
It could seriously change based upon what happens on Monday night. So yeah, it's a tough life we lead, to be sure. Well, the purpose of this podcast in a global sense is to explore the ping pong ball race because. You and I follow this stuff closely, so I won't hit on that. But I do have one.
We have problems.
We watch
the bad teams.
We do have to be honest with you. But there is one Hawksy thing to hit on before we get into the madness that is the bottom of the NBA this year, and that is there was a the report over the weekend, actually earlier this week, that from Adrian Wojnarowski that said that three guys were available basically, and those guys were Kent Bazemore, Ursula Ilyasova, and Marco Bellinelli. We talked about that a little bit earlier in the week on the podcast, but there was an extension of that report from Mike Scotto of Basketball Insiders on Thursday saying basically that the asking price that the Hawks have put out there for both Bellinelli and Ilyasova as a second round pick. Does that make sense to you? Because the first thing I thought of, honestly, was, yep, that sounds about right. Because I don't think you're going to get a first-round pick for either one of those guys. And yet, if you get a quality second-round pick, that would be enough for me to pull the trigger.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Those are second-round pick-type players. You find you go to the deadline, and you find a Minnesota or a Toronto or a Milwaukee who's just, you know, they could use a three-point shooter. They don't need to be great. They don't need a guy that's going to carry a lot of minutes, which neither of them do. They just need someone that's going to go out there and shoot three-pointers for them and maybe raise their three-point percentage a little bit. And that's what all those guys can do. So you go find someone probably towards the end of the deadline. I don't think anyone's going to really make a move for them before the deadline because I can't see why, like, either any good team, because I assume a good team would trade for one of those. Maybe a mediocre team does if, like, you know, that's one of those throw-in trades where, oh, we need this to create cap, which then you can move them and get a second-round pick for it. But I think this will be one of those deals where, like, it's towards the end of the deadline, and then as someone big is getting traded, Vilmore comes in at the last second. Is like, oh, by the way, Bellinelli just got traded to the to the Bucks for a second round pick, and we go, oh, neat.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's one of those things where, I mean, the last time the Hawks made this kind of move was Kyle Korver, and it was pretty early, actually, but that was a situation where they got the price that they wanted, and they weren't sure it was going to be around, so they just took it. That was a January trade.
And Korver is also a much more important player to Cleveland than what Bellinelli or Ilyasova would be.
Right, the price, I mean, if for some reason they were able to get a godfather offer of like a, you know, super protected first rounder for Ilyasova, maybe because he's a better player, they would probably take that right away. But aside from that, like, there's no incentive to really like rush and take that kind of trade. Obviously, these two guys won't be the only two that are available. You have Dwayne Dedman. It's probably going to be available. A couple of other expiring contracts
will
be out there. I mean, he's available just because of the fact that he's expiring. I mean, he's not.
Oh, yeah.
He has a player option, but all indications are that he would not pick that up unless he was injured, basically. He was playing so well early in the season where I'd be pretty darn surprised, barring injury, if he were to decline that player option. But in the case of a couple of these guys, Dedman included, he kind of has a no-trade clause implicit because of the bird rights issue, all that fun stuff. So it's
I'd be surprised if anyone would trade for Dedman, just because if you really want him, why would you trade something for him when you can get him in free agency?
Yeah, it would have to be a team. Same thing with Mike Muscala. It's a similar situation. Those guys have 1+1s with player options. But yeah, Dedman, it'd have to be a team that was trying to win big this year. Like, I think Boston makes a little bit of sense for Dedman, like as an upgrade on Aaron Baines, for instance. But I'm not sure they're going to pay what it would take to get him. I don't know. It's one of those things where there isn't an obvious landing spot. And that's the trouble with all this stuff. Like, as you can imagine, Hawks fans regularly ask me where these guys will go. It's not whether they'll be traded. It's like, where's a good landing spot? And it's like, well, look around and try to find a team that needs a shooter. If you're talking about Bellinelli, Ilyasova can kind of do a lot of different things, but isn't necessarily a starter. Dedman, you could do worse than him as a starting center, but like, these guys are not moving the needle enough to where there's like obvious landing spots. There are teams that could use these guys for sure, but you also, if you're the Hawks, you don't want to take back any bad salary either. So it's one of those things where you kind of have to have almost a perfect match, because I just can't imagine the Hawks are taking back bad salary unless the other team sort of overpays in the form of a draft compensation. So it's a tough mix, and these guys are going to be marketed. I'm positive that the Hawks will make a trade at some point between now and February 8th. I just don't know which one it's going to be, obviously.
That's a word. Those are
you are
words
a professional
that,
writer, Chris Barnwell.
I am a great writer. That's why I think that they would fit more as a throw-in type of guys.
Yep.
So let's say this isn't going to happen, but let's say Paul George gets traded to Cleveland or Los Angeles, and they need to dump some salary, or they need to find a player to make the salary work. Hey, let's call up Atlanta, throw them a second round pick. They'll send us over Bellinelli as just trying to make the salary for the deal work, and then they'll get what they want, and we'll get this trade to go through. That's how I feel that kind of deal for them would go through.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And listen, I mean, it's still early, but that report sort of made the rounds, and I wrote about it a little bit, so I wanted to at least get it out there. But nothing too surprising. I think a second round pick kind of makes a lot of sense for those guys. So we'll see if the Hawks are able to get it, and whether they pull the trigger or not. We can sort of move into the meat of the podcast, and that is basically us breaking down the bottom. Just because, you know, the Hawks have the worst record in the league. That's not a World Cup secret in Atlanta. They only have a half game quote unquote lead on the Orlando Magic, who you know very well. So those two teams we can get to in a little bit. But I've picked out 9 teams that I think can realistically be a sort of a real factor in the bottom/top 3. And actually, before we started recording, you posited a 10th. So please throw that team out that's sort of in limbo to where, if they made a move or two, they could certainly get into this group.
The Hornets have high tank potential. High tank potential. They just lost to the Mavericks when the Mavericks were playing their third game in 4 nights. And Charlotte was on a 4 games rest. Kemba Walker scored 41 points, and they still lost. That team is in a really bad spot right now. Steve Clifford's finally coming back from illness. He's been gone over a month, so that might be what they need to kind of spark them and get some more wins, because Charlotte is one of those teams where when I watch them, I'm like, this team doesn't look bad. They play organized. They play coherently. But then you see the results. It's like, nope, it doesn't matter. They're losing games. So if for whatever reason they go, you know what, it's over. We tried to make the playoffs. We spent all this money. We're going to be in the tax next year. We're terrible. Let's just trade Kemba Walker. That could tank them immediately. They would immediately look for a trade option for Batum. If not, they would probably shut him down to tank. They definitely shut down Zeller. He's already hurt.
Yep.
This is a potentially awful basketball team that is only being held up by Kemba Walker, and they only have 15 games, they've only won 15 games, which kind of says a lot about, you know, where they're at.
Yeah, they actually have fewer wins than the Phoenix Suns, if you can believe that. And you mentioned Kemba. It's kind of hilarious how much they change when Kemba leaves the court. They're a positive team.
They're so bad.
Yeah, they're positive with him, and they are the worst team in the league by far without him. So if they were to move on from him, and it might be time. I mean, there's been some whispers about it. I think it's tough to rebuild in that market. You know, that's, a lot of those whispers were about Atlanta too, but Charlotte's even a smaller market. They've also already lost a team, so a little bit
those
more.
Those whispers are, I will say, those whispers are speculation from people that are not out that part of the Hornets organization.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know this from Atlanta. Atlanta and Charlotte are two of the least leaky teams in the NBA. They do not leak anything. They do not want out. So,
and listen, I mean, you can argue both sides. I do think, you know, in a vacuum, if Charlotte was in a large market that was not worried about losing their fans, it would make a whole lot of sense to rebuild / tank right now. But with that
said, right, but when you're Charlotte, you really cling to that. We need to at least try and fight for the playoffs,
And they've already, I mean, they sort of went all in. I mean, they spent, as you well know, they spent a ton of money on this team. It hasn't gone according to plan, except for, you know, Kemba's still being awesome. But they have these long term contracts with Batum and Marvin Williams, and even Dwight has, you know, another year after this at big money. It'd be kind of tough to tear down in a hurry. Aside from just moving on from Walker, who they obviously don't want to trade necessarily because he's by far their best asset. So, you know, without getting too deep on Charlotte, that's a team that could join this. I think they're better than that. And you mentioned Clifford coming back. That's a huge thing because he's very, very good at his job.
They need their coach.
Yeah. Like, I mean,
Clifford is a genius.
Yeah.
No offense to Stephen Silas, who's probably going to be a head coach someday. It might be a great head coach someday, but this is Steve Clifford's team.
But they're, yeah. And with that said, I mean, there's a reason that Charlotte's still projected to have a 29% chance make the playoffs according to 538s, because they've been really quote unlucky. Like, their net rating is a lot better than their record.
That's how they always are.
Agreed, but it's one of the things. If you look at
last
the numbers,
last season they lost like 11 games by 3 points. Like,
there are certain teams. You know, the Wolves were always like that, where the Wolves would always be better than their net rating and always lose a lot of games. So it's not like it's that's not something to take to the bank. But I think they're, if healthy and trying, and with Steve Clifford, they're better than all these teams we're about to talk about. But as you smartly mentioned to me before we started recording, they could certainly join this group if they wanted to. I'm just not sure they're going to actually want to.
They definitely don't want to, but, you know, they might be forced to, just because, especially if the ownership goes, no, we're not paying the luxury tax for this.
Yeah, for sure. We can move off from Charlotte. There are three teams in this group that are playing pretty well, honestly, right now, and that's Phoenix, Chicago, and Dallas. Phoenix is 7-5 in their last 12 games, and honestly, since the opening stretch where Earl Watson was a disaster, they've actually been pretty reasonable. Chicago is 12-7 in their last 19 after starting 3-20, so they've been pretty decent lately. And Dallas is about .500 since their 2-14 start. So, you know, these teams are playing a lot better than the Hawks at this moment in time, in terms of, at least in terms of win loss results. But at the same time, all of these teams have won between 15 and 16 games so far. There's not that, you know, the Hawks have 11 wins, and that's the worst team in the league. So there's a lot of room there. Out of those three, who do you think is the best team? Like, I guess the most likely to avoid the bottom three, and who is the team most likely to sort of fall off a cliff again? Because I honestly was wrong about the Bulls. I thought the whole time the Bulls were going to be the worst team.
You were not wrong about the Bulls till like a month ago.
No, I mean, yeah, I looked to be very, very smart until suddenly they rattled off that 6-game win streak, I think it was, maybe 7.
It was long.
Yeah, and now, I mean, again, they're 12-7 in their last 19. So, like, I'm not sure that's real. In fact, I'm pretty confident it's not, but they're 15 wins now, and I thought they might win 15 for the entire season, to be honest with you. So I was as low on them as humanly possible. I had them, I think, picked for, I think, 19 or 20 wins on the year. And at this point in time, they'd have to just completely die to actually be that bad.
Yeah, I don't see the Bulls falling apart as that to that level. I don't, maybe they will, because they are two for their last, what's it,
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6,
counting. They're like two for the last 7, so
it's good podcasting to just count wins and losses. I like that. That's what we do.
Yeah, I'm very experienced at this. they could still fall off. They're like two for the last seven. They're still bad.
I mean, they're
still bad.
They're still bad. Yes.
So there is definitely a fall off possibility, especially if they trade Mirotić, who's actually been surprisingly good for them. They're coming up with a really rough schedule. They got Detroit and Golden State and Miami coming up. Hey, Atlanta. So they're still losing potential in Chicago. I think they're definitely going to be in the mix, especially if they go all in on a tank job. But the thing is, Fred Hoiberg's proving to actually be a better coach than he's shown basically his entire career. Maybe it's because he finally got to run what he wanted to run with these players. They are getting Zach LaVine back, so from the standpoint of how they've been playing recently, I don't think the Bulls are the worst team, but they definitely have a chance to go bottom out again and join the Hawks, because we saw what they looked like at the beginning of the year. That didn't just like happen and then get ignored.
I mean, they were 3-20 like that, and that seemed real, awful. Honestly. Like,
I will give them this. Towards the end of their losing, when they went on that long losing streak towards the end of November and early December, when they were 3-20, there was a period where it was like they were losing a lot of close games. Here it is. After they lost to Golden State, just got whooped by them, 143-94. They lost to the Heat, 193. They lost to the Suns, 104-99. They lost to Denver by 1 point. They lost to the Kings by 1 point. They hung around with the Cavs, but you know what? Everyone hangs around with the Cavs these days.
Yeah.
They hung around with the Pacers. They all lost to them by 2 points. And then they ripped off that win streak. So they were starting to kind of pull it together towards the end there, where it's like, okay, maybe we aren't as bad as we are. We're finally kind of figuring this out. So that might have been more what they were supposed to be. And they're still bad. They're just not absolutely horrendous anymore, which that's a major prop considering where they were.
Yeah, for sure. And just for a little bit of reference, 538 has the Bulls projected to finish 31-51, which is, you know, pretty good based on where they were.
Dallas, that's incredible, but is it? Because yeah. I know a lot of Bulls fans are like, I wanted the draft pick.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I'm not sure I buy it. I think I'd probably go under that, to be honest with you, but still not by a whole lot. You know, Dallas projected at 33-49, and Phoenix, who is kind of under the radar, decent, at 30-52 projected. So all these teams, 30-plus wins, and that's not necessarily that shocking. You know, Phoenix, I'd argue, probably has the most talent on the roster of all these three teams.
Phoenix, I don't like Phoenix just because...
I don't either, but they have a lot of weird young talent that's not ready to win yet, if that makes sense. Like, they just have a bunch of guys.
This is what Phoenix does. There's two versions of Phoenix. Actually, there's two versions of Phoenix. There's the one that wins games close, and then there's the one that just gets blown off the face of the earth so horrendously bad in a loss that it's almost funny. Like, that's basically the two versions that exist within the Suns, is they either lose big or win close.
And they're 20th in net rating as a result of that.
Yes. But there are all these games where you constantly look at the box scores like, oh, Devin Booker scored a bunch again. Oh, Devin Booker scored a bunch of points again. Oh, look at that. Devin Booker is leading all scorers. So he's kind of the thing that's holding them together.
Oh, certainly. I mean, Devin Booker is, I would probably argue, the best player of the three teams at the moment. You know, Dallas is clearly not, you know, Dirk's not what he used to be, and the Bulls don't
have that guy. Chris Dunn like that.
Yeah, Chris Dunn's been good, but he's not as good as Devin Booker. And really, I mean, aside from the Grizzlies, who we'll talk about here next, nobody else on this list has anybody that's as good as Booker right now, I don't think. Let me make sure I'm not crazy here, but yeah, I'll say that. I mean, aside from Marcus Gasol and Mike Conley, who we can talk about in a second, Booker's probably the best player. So, yeah, it's one of those things where I think these three teams are a little bit above the rest of these squads that we're going to talk about, but I'm not married to that necessarily. And I think, you know, sort of in a transition, Memphis is in their sort of their own tier for me, because we kind of know that they're pretty decent if Mike Conley plays, but if Mike Conley doesn't play, they're not. I mean, they're 7-5 with him. They're 6-22 without him. And they really don't have any incentive now to push him. So maybe, like, does he play this year? I mean, we're all kind of guessing, and they won't obviously rule it out. But if I'm the Grizzlies, there's very little incentive for me to play Mike Conley again.
Yeah, I don't play Mike Conley. I say you let him rest, because isn't his injury one of those types that don't really fully heal besides rest?
Yeah, it's an Achilles. And, I mean, the thing is, like, they're so far out of it now, and they are so bad without him, and I think they probably know that, I mean, if they shut him down, they really, really get into the mix to be a top three draft pick team, because
the only reason you play him is if you want to showcase him that he's healthy so you can trade him.
Yeah, I mean, and I doubt they're going to do that. I mean,
no, they're wanting to trade Gasol.
Shouts to a good friend of the program, Tyler Jones, who was on this earlier about Memphis being risky because of how much they rely on Gasol and Conley, but I mean, I was higher on them than most, and I was wrong, because, like, they just, I mean, obviously you can't predict injury with Conley, but just, I think it was safe to assume that they were going to, at least one of those guys was going to miss some time, and with either one of them out of the lineup, they're just truly awful, and it's the roster's just not deep enough. So if they were to shut Conley down, do you think they would be, I mean, if we assume they don't have Conley, are they in the mix as the worst team in the league?
100%, yes.
I mean, I think so too. I mean, Marc Gasol, I would argue, is better than anybody on the Hawks or anybody better.
They could easily shut down Gasol and, like, after the All-Star break.
I'm not sure he'd love that because of just the way he's made up, but I mean,
if he's fighting some injuries though.
Yeah, maybe he can be convinced though, because look, I mean, it can't be fun to go out and lose, and if he knows that Conley's not coming back, he's got to know deep down that they're not going to win. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, if they could easily. I think that's what kind of why they're in their own tier for me. If Conley suddenly was back in 3 weeks, they could. They're better than all these teams. But if he's not back at all, they're as bad as the Hawks and the Magic and the Kings. Honestly, they just are.
Yeah, they are. It's amazing. Just without Conley, they are easily one of the three worst teams in the NBA. Which, well, maybe not one of the three worst, but they
might be though. Really. I wouldn't say easily, but they're certainly in the mix for it. I mean, I think...
Man, Atlanta, Sacramento, and Orlando are bad.
we're coming to them, I promise. We're saving them for last. But yeah, it's Memphis could be certainly in that group if Conley's gone and Gasol is not, you know, operating at 15.
It's just so dependent on what they choose to do. Because the Grizzlies have shown no indication they want to trade Marc Gasol, which that tells you they want to win. Which, if that means when Conley gets healthy, they try to win games, they could fight their way up to 32 wins and then be a mediocre lottery team.
No Memphis fan is wanting that to happen right now. I mean, no. There's no incentive. Like, I'd be different if they could, you know, realistically make the playoffs, but 32 wins is not appealing for anyone. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I'm not someone that likes to crap on what, like, there were a couple of people who, when the Bulls were on their win streak, was like, what are they doing? They should be losing. They want to tank. Because, like, crapping all wins is stupid. Enjoy winning streaks. Enjoy winning games. Like, you don't have to go 0-82. You don't even have to win. You have the worst record in the NBA to win the lottery. Like, so I'm not a fan of crapping all wins. But at the same time, you can do things like not bring back your best player who's already kind of hurt just for the sake of reaching 32 wins.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of upside for the future in letting Conley just get healthy for 10 months. Like having him just rehab and like take care of himself and not try to push it and be as healthy as he can, because look, they have that massive investment in him, and you know, I'm not sure you could trade Mike Conley now. I mean, I'm sure you could trade him, but it wouldn't be like you're getting assets for him. That contract is probably neutral. And I love Mike Conley, but like that's a lot of money for Mike Conley. I think he's very good at basketball, but it's not like he's some sort of bargain. So yeah, I mean, they have to hope. It's kind of like Blake Griffin in a different way for the Clippers, who we're not going to include on this list because their record's just too good for it. But, you know, it's one of those things where like there's no reason for them to risk anything with Mike Conley. They're paying him for a long time and a lot of money, and it's time to be careful, I would say. But, I don't know. Aside from that, it sounds like...
Did we skip Dallas?
We kind of talked about. I mean, I think they're in that group with Phoenix and Chicago. Maybe I'm crazy.
No, I agree with you. I think they're in that group too. I just wanted to say that I would probably put them above Phoenix and Chicago because Rick Carlisle is a warlock that makes sure his teams are constantly in games. They lose so many close games as opposed to a lot of these other bad teams who just get blown the heck out. And that's just an indication of, well, one, veterans on the team, but two, a really good coach that keeps them close, that even with this terrible, terrible roster.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, they did the exact same thing last year. They just started absolutely terribly, and they were pretty decent the rest of the way. This year, they started absolutely terribly again, and they've been pretty decent ever since.
It's like, the Rick Carlisle taking strategy. He's just like, amazing. All right. I mean, he's like, all right, I'll give you a month, and then I do it my way.
We're going to be terrible until, like, mid-December, and then we're going to be a 500 team from that point forward. And that is a result in 30 wins. And that's like, okay, I guess that, I mean, this year got Dennis Smith, so congratulations. But yeah, I mean, I think I would probably agree. I think they're better. They're the best team on the floor right now of all these teams that we're really talking about. It's just that the start that they were in, and there is some incentive for them to sort of soft some bets potentially. Like Wes Matthews has been bandied about as a trade guy. Dirk, obviously they're not going to want to push down the stretch, et cetera. So, yeah, I think they're probably better than these teams, but they're definitely in the mix just because of the way their roster is constructed. I think you teased it a little bit earlier in saying that your bottom three was Sacramento, Orlando, and Atlanta. Is there any chance that a team like the Lakers or the Nets could get into that three-team group? Because I think they're kind of in that – the two teams that we haven't talked about yet, and they're kind of in that middle tier in terms of record and projection because, you know, the Lakers have been really, really bad for a while now. Brooklyn – was a nice story early on, and they sort of come back to earth, but they also have some injury stuff. So these teams are kind of weird to evaluate, both of them.
Okay, before we get into that, I have some trivia for you.
Oh, yeah, bring it.
Okay, the Pacers beat the Mavericks 98-94 on December 27th. Who was the leading scorer, and how many points did he have?
For the Pacers or for the Magic?
The Mavericks, Dallas.
The Mavericks.
December 27th. Who was the leading scorer for the entire game, and how many points did they have? The final score is 98-94.
Dallas. Let's see. I would guess Lance Stephenson. Because you asked me.
That's probably, I didn't think about that, but no.
That's probably wrong, but
he led assists with 15. Darren Collison led everyone in scoring with 16 points.
And there was a 98-94 basketball game?
How is that possible? That's the lowest amount of points I've seen someone lead all scorers with, like, in years.
The Hawks have had a couple games this year where their own team has been, somewhere in the mid-teens. But, like, having the entire game like that is pretty wild. I'm trying to remember. I think earlier in the year when the Hawks got just murdered by the Raptors, I want to say that, like, everybody on Toronto had, like, 15 points each. And maybe there was a game where it was, like, the high score was... Huh?
There was three people tied with 16: Miles Turner, Collison, and Stephenson.
Well, that's a little bit less crazy, I guess. But
yeah, that wild. Makes more sense. Still, weird.
I love trivia. So shouts to that. That's a very very bizarre box score. back to the task at hand. What was I? Oh yeah, Brooklyn.
Los Angeles, Brooklyn.
Yeah, Brooklyn and Los Angeles. The Lakers. I mean, not the Clippers. Either out of those two teams, do you see either one of them, like, really flattening out? I think, you know, the Lakers have more talent than the Nets, pretty obviously, but they're in this weird spot where they could be looking to trade Randall and Clarkson and Nance to clear the books for next year. You still have Alonzo weirdness. Brooklyn is really depleted in the backcourt. Obviously, you know, Dinwiddie has been a revelation, but aside from that, there isn't a whole lot going on with that roster. So either one of those teams have a chance to sort of chase down, quote-unquote, the Hawks and the Magic?
The Nets, no. The Nets are too pesky. The Nets... talent is, it makes sense together. They play a style that keeps them in games. They rarely rip off enough wins. They've all season they've been the same team, and they're going to consistently be that all season. I don't see them really falling apart. They're going to hang around in that top 10 draft pick range all season long, which sucks for them. They don't have a draft pick, so they don't really care. So they're not going to.
Sorry, Cleveland.
So they're not going to have any reason to tank. Yeah, sorry, Cleveland. There's just too many bad teams this year. The Lakers, 100% yes. They're not good.
No, they're not.
I get that everyone wants them to be better because they have a lot of young players. Their young players are kind of fun. Kyle Kuzma's interesting. Luke Walton's good. They play teams close.
I have a question about the Lakers. Why are they bad on offense? They are 28th in offensive rating. They're only better than Sacramento and Chicago. Their defense has been better than anybody thought it was going to be this year, although it has cooled off lately. But why are they so bad on offense? Like, I know they have – it's not like I'm expecting them to be great on offense, but, like, if you were just looking at this roster, you would think maybe, like, half-decent offense, terrible defense, and it's kind of been the opposite this year to where, like, I never would have projected the Hawks, for instance, to have a better offense than the Lakers this year, and they have. So it's kind of – I don't know. It's weird to me.
Their better players aren't good offensive players. Like, you have Brook Lopez at least, but for a while they had Andrew Bogut, and he was one of their better players, and he just tanked the offense.
He's bad. They're, offense. That's a fact at this point.
They're very defensive minded too, which that's just I think that's an effect of Luke Walton. I think he's more interested in implementing a good offense, a good defense as opposed to a good offense. Also, they don't really have shooters. I know they have Kyle Kuzma, and that he's nice, but they're not really a good shooting team.
I mean, and KCP is a shooter who can't shoot.
Right, KCP's a shooter who can't shoot, which so they have the number one pace in the NBA, which cool, but that doesn't really mean much when you're turning the ball over all the time and you can't shoot shots, which I think that's why their offense is terrible. They're young and they can't shoot.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I just think I would not have projected that, but your points are certainly valid. I do think they're going to be worse than the Nets, barring, you know, at some point in time Brooklyn's injury and situation becomes too difficult to handle.
It is possible Los Angeles' young guys go through that point in March where they just become a pain in the ass for good teams because they're too stupid and young to realize that, oh, we don't have to try anymore. So they try really hard and they win games and the young guys kind of play well. So maybe Lonzo Ball makes a Rookie of the Year push and then they could win some games. But I still think they have a very high potential of being one of the worst NBA teams. I think they're awful.
Yeah, they're pretty bad.
And there's just so much... This is even related to the man who should not go named on any media outlet, in my opinion. They have a lot of off-court drama just in general. Like, Julius Randle and Jordan Clarkson are constantly in trade rumors. And Magic Johnson and Jeannie Buss have no issues making that publicly known. Which, how do you play basketball knowing you're constantly on the trade block and be happy about it?
You don't.
Right, so yeah. Of course they're bad. Of course, no, they have off-court drama issues. And it's just, it's so preventable. The Lakers are one of the most frustrating teams because a lot of their issues are so freaking preventable. And their entire front office's idea and plans is just, oh, well, we're going to go sign for some free agents and fix it. All right, sure.
Yeah, I hope it works out for you. okay, we can let's get to the main event, the bottom three. This is very weird to me because Sacramento has easily the worst net rating in the league. They're minus 10 for 100. Orlando is playing the worst basketball of anybody right now. They are 1-15 in their last 16 games. And then the Hawks actually have the worst record in the league. So out of those three, if I put the gun to your head, proverbially, of course, who finishes with the worst record? Because I honestly have no idea who I would choose just because there's a bunch of conflicting narratives there. I don't think Orlando is as bad as they look, but like they're playing that bad right now, man. They've been really, really bad for a while now.
I think it's Atlanta just because I remember towards the end of the new year, I was like, oh no, they're not going to have single, they're not going to reach double digit wins until they pulled off that win against Portland for no reason. It was looking sketchy there. I don't think they're really going to be able to win enough games. There's a chance they could trade. You just even said earlier they were going to trade a couple of their veteran guys for second round picks. They are a good, they're a team that has a good chance at trading away good players to be even worse for future assets. So I think Atlanta could comfortably be the worst team in the NBA. Now, as far as an actual bad basketball team, I don't think anyone's worse than the Kings. They're horrendous. They are so, so bad. It's incredible. They are one of the worst NBA net rating. They are the worst offense and defense and net rating in the NBA. And they don't have the worst record. Do you know how hard that is?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know.
It's so good.
They are,
they just win, they mask it by winning some random game every once in a while where Vince Carter scores 22 points. And apparently they're actually really good in the clutch. Check out
that's how Zach you win Harper. Games. I mean, that's the only way you could possibly not have the worst record is if you have the worst offensive rating, the worst defensive rating, and they are third worst in effective field goal percentage, they are last in true shooting percentage, they play the third slowest pace. They're just bad at everything. But if you're good in the clutch, man, you just win sometimes.
They just win stupid games, and it masks the fact that they are easily the worst team in the NBA from an actual basketball schematics perspective, from like just of results and of what actually watching them. Like you watch them, you're like, oh man, this team's bad. It's not even, oh, they're young guys are, you know, learning and getting better. It's like, no, they're just a bad basketball team with young players.
By the way, in follow up to the clutch point, they're 11-8 in games that have clutch situations, which for a team as bad as they are is very, very good. They are plus 19.5 points per 100 possessions in clutch situations this year.
Check out Zach Harper's post on FanRag Sports about it. He wrote about it a little bit, and it was just, it's mind-boggling how good they are in the clutch for such a horrendously bad basketball team.
Yeah, so it's, I am tempted to say that's not going to continue, and if I had to pick a team to finish with the worst record, I would pick the Kings. For all that,
that would be a safe pick.
For all their luck, I mean, they only have a 2.5 game lead on the Hawks right now, and 2 games against the Magic, so that's not big enough to scare me off of it. It does matter. I mean, because if you're talking about teams projected to win in the low 20s now, everyone counts, and they have 2 more wins than the Hawks and 1 more win than the Magic. But I think they are the worst team, and the gap isn't wide enough for me to say that they won't be the worst team at the end of the year.
The thing with the Kings is, I know a lot of people hate this, but they do have veterans, and veterans know how to win games. So part of the reason they do win these random games for no reason when Vince Carter scores 24 points against the Cavaliers and goes vintage for a night is because veterans just know how to pull out those random wins. It's why rebuilding teams hate signing a bunch of veterans because they ruin their chances at tanking because they are inevitably going to win a game or two. Well, this is why they shut them all down at the end of the year.
This is the argument that Hawks fans made to me before the season because the Hawks did sign a bunch of vets. I mean, this Hawks team has a ton of veterans on it. We talked about a couple of them at the beginning of the podcast. And honestly, they've been really unlucky to be as bad as they are. The Hawks' net rating is not nearly as bad as the numbers would indicate in terms of their win-loss record. And that's quote-unquote good because of the fact that they're not trying to win games this year. I know a lot of sort of fans don't love to hear about that, and this whole podcast is probably going to infuriate them in general. But you know, the Hawks are only, quote-unquote, 25th in net rating. They have a better net rating than the Lakers and the Magic and the Suns and the Bulls and the Kings, which is probably where I thought they'd be coming into the year, like somewhere in that 25 range, not dead last like they are in win-loss record. So they haven't had the benefit of the veterans, but I do think in general, though, your point is a good one in that, you know, it takes some luck for sure, but it does. There is something to, you know, vets being able to help you win games, because if you're playing a ton of young guys, if when and if the Hawks actually go to, like, you know, in March and April, if they're really just playing like Tower Dorsey a lot and they're playing all their young guys, DeAndre Bembry comes back and they're playing, you know, more just pure youth lineups, they're going to be worse in these situations. Right now, it's just they've been getting kind of unlucky and just not getting shots to fall in clutch situations, all that fun stuff. But I don't know, man. The Kings are just bad. Like, it's amazing to think, like, what's their record supposed to be?
This is Bob Cadian.
I'm about to look this up, because I wonder what their quote expected one loss actually is. Because
I'm gonna put them at 25.
I mean, they're projected at 538 to finish with 25 wins, but like right now, I'm trying to pull up their basketball reference page, because they have the expected one loss that's just out. Like, even so far, like, they do like the to date expected win loss. So they're 13.
Funny enough about the Hawks, one thing that actually might make them a little better is if they play the young guys, because a lot of their young guys are better rebounders, and they are the worst rebounding team in the NBA.
Yeah, I mean,
okay. Which, by the way, that's weird.
Yeah, it is a little bit strange. But Sacramento, they're 13-27. Their expected win loss is 9-31. So they've gotten four wins of close game luck / weird clutch performance already in half a season. So I mean, over a full sample of games, that'd be 8 full wins difference between their net rating and where they actually are performing. We've seen some teams do that kind of stuff in the past. We mentioned the Hornets early on in this podcast, being really unlucky at times. The Wolves with Kevin Love had a famous season where they had like a positive 2 points per 100 possessions net rating, and they won like 34 games because they just got incredibly unlucky all season long. But I mean, I don't know, man. I'm not gonna project the Kings to still be this good in clutch situations all season long. It's just not gonna happen.
That's a fair, like, nothing you said is wrong. It's just part of it is probably my ego wanting the Hawks to be the worst team, because I picked them to be the worst team before the season started. So.
Listen, I mean, okay, if I asked you what percentage chance do you think of the Hawks finishing with the worst record? I would say it's less than 50-50. But if you want to tell me that they have the biggest chance, I wouldn't argue with you, if that makes sense. Like, I think there's all these teams are in the mix. I think there's probably 3 or 4 teams that have a really, really good chance. I'd probably put it at like 25 or 30% chance that the Hawks have the worst record. But you might feel like it's higher than that, which, again, is not crazy. I mean, it's not like it's going to be 80%, but like, where would you put that number if you had to put it out there? I'd probably go like 20-25 for me.
I'd probably put them at 34. I'd probably put the Kings at 30, and I'd probably put the Magic at 28.
Give me your Magic thoughts, because I know you're close to that. You're down there. I mean,
I don't know if it's because I watched them, but I don't think they're this bad.
That's what I was gonna say. I mean, it's not debatable that they've been playing as bad as they've been, but their roster is so much better than this, and we saw it early in the year.
Well,
I mean,
not just the roster. Like, you watch them play, and you're like, no, this isn't. They shouldn't be this bad. Like, they
had some injuries. Like, that's, I mean, the Vucevic thing. They had some injury stuff that
the injuries decimated them,
hurt them in a big way. But like, still, they shouldn't have been at any point as bad as they've been. You know, losing 15-16. Is like performance art. Like, their roster is not that bad. Like, they just shouldn't be this bad, but it's not a small sample now. Like,
they've won 4 games since they were 8-4.
Yeah, I mean, they were 8-4. This team was 8-4.
Like, and they won 4
wild.
Games.
They're 12-30. I mean, they're 4-26 in a 30 game sample. That's worse than the Bulls have ever been this year in a 30 game sample. Like, it's bad, man. That's the worst 30-game sample in the league this year, that's for sure.
And they definitely had it. Like, there was a period where Elfrid Payton was the only healthy player that was from the original starting lineup at the beginning of the season. That's how hurt they were at one point.
God bless Elfrid Payton, but he's not going to be able to do it for you by himself.
Yeah, I think he's been playing pretty well lately, but yeah,
he's
fine.
We
can talk about it on another podcast. He's okay.
He's
okay.
Fine. I mean, he's fine. That's what he is. He's just, he's not a guy that you're ever going to be thrilled with as a starting point guard, but he's fine.
Right, he's not going to win you games when your entire starting lineup's hurt, though. Which,
correct.
they were starting a Wes Iwundu and Mario Hezonja and
Shouts to Mario. Well, we're here. Shouts to Mario Hezonja.
Yeah, biggest Mario Hezonja stand in the world, and right there.
Not true. Danny LaRue still holds the crown for Mario. I actually am intrigued to see what happens if he leaves there, but not in a way that like I'm expecting him to be good. It's like there's a small
chance. The
Magic
has a really bad track record of development, so if he went off and he became a good role player.
Yeah.
If he went off and became a good role player somewhere else, I would not be shocked, especially with how well he's been playing. With Mario Hezonja has never been a good basketball player his entire career until the injury bug thrust him into the starting lineup and he actually started playing pretty well with more minutes. That's the first time he has ever in his entire NBA career played well. Like, that is just a fact. He was a bad basketball player.
Yep, agreed.
In a big way. That's one of the reasons why I think this Magic team shouldn't be this bad, because as they've gotten more healthy, they're going into that range where it's like, oh, they're losing close games as opposed to blowout losses. And it's really frustrating watching them, because you watch them play and the system is sound, the defense is sound. Well, the defense isn't sound, but the defensive system is sound. Frank Vogel's a good coach. So it's like none of this should add up to how bad they are and how many games they lose, but they just keep losing games. It's almost like they're losing. It's almost like they're holding onto a rope. And they've reached the point where they can't hold on to the rope anymore, but they know they can't hold on to the rope anymore, but they're trying to hold on to it anyways, and just it's all falling apart.
Yeah, I mean, it's... that's probably enough on that.
What's funny is when they win games, against, like, the Thunder and, like,
Pistons. When they put it together, it's actually pretty good. But, okay, I have to get you on record with some predictions. Give me your bottom five in reverse order. And this is obviously completely arbitrary, and we're all guessing. But give me your bottom five from 5-1 at the end of the year in terms of projected win-loss.
Lakers. Grizzlies. Magic. Kings. Hawks.
Yeah, that's reasonable. I will go...
I feel like the Magic should. If I had to pick a team that would not be a part of that, it would be the Magic, because they actually got their stuff together. Which in that case, I think the team that would join that would fall apart there would be the Suns. I just still don't think they're any good.
Yeah, I will go Bulls, Lakers, Magic, Hawks, Kings.
God, this is sad.
It is, and that's why I had you on the podcast, Chris, so we can have some fun with this.
Because we watch bad basketball.
But no, it was time. It's a good time. I mean, it's, you know, the Hawks have played 41 games. It's their midseason mark here. As people are listening to this on Friday, they will play tonight at home to kick off a homestand of 9 games in 10 at home, including 6 in a row. So this is a chance for the Hawks to get healthy, so to speak, in terms of their win loss. If they don't make a run here, if they don't win like 4 of the next 10 at least, they're going to be probably projected to be dead last in everybody's list, and that would be the right thing, because you know if you don't go out and at least post a 4-6 in this 10-game span, man, it's going to be a long year. But I'll keep them out of the basement for now. I mean, part of that is probably just to save face with the fan base, but I do think better than the Kings.
The Kings, okay. I think it was Zach Lowe who coined the term Bobcatian with being the worst offense and defense and net rating in the NBA. And right now the Kings have all three.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to be as bad as they've been, honestly. And
win games.
And win some games. But yeah.
It makes me happy, honestly.
The Hawks are better than them. They just are. And I think at some point it will balance out enough. With the caveat that, look, the Hawks are more set up to make trades than most of these teams are. So if they started selling, really, really selling, and like, you know, if they suddenly didn't have Ilyasova for the rest of the season, and they suddenly didn't have maybe Deadman or one of those guys, they could be a lot worse in a hurry, because Ilyasova, for instance, is really their only quality power forward on the entire roster. I guess if you count John Collins as one, which I do not, I think he's a center. Aside from that, he's the only power forward on the team that you are really excited about playing. So if you took him away, for instance, that would really hurt the Hawks, et cetera, without getting too deep into it. But, yeah, I mean, they're a team that could pivot more than most because of all the expired contracts and the fact that they're openly tanking, obviously.
How'd they beat the Nuggets?
The Nuggets did not play well. I watched that game twice. Jokic was terrible. He was 4 of 21 from the floor.
Ooh.
And the Hawks played well. I mean, the Hawks played well by their standards. They really competed defensively. They made a bunch of shots themselves, but it was a classic game where the Hawks played like a B-plus, A-minus game, and Denver played like a D game.
And because they're professional basketball players, that's going to happen, and eventually
I mean,
teams are going to win.
If Jokic had been decent, it would have been a close game, at the very least. But he was terrible. It's about as bad as he could possibly play. And the Hawks.
Ooh, Jamal Murray was bad, too.
Yeah. I mean, Denver just didn't play well. I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find really anybody on the Nuggets that I think actually played well in that game based on their normal sort of baseline value. And the Hawks had a few guys that played well. So that's what happens. I mean, they were due for one. Denver and Matt, you know, your friend of mine, Matt Moore, was talking about how Denver's prone to laying these kind of eggs in December and January. And they definitely laid one there. So that, you know, it was a good win for the Hawks. And they needed one in the worst way. It looked like they were going to finish 0-5 on a West Coast win. That can be pretty deflating for a team that's already not playing well. But ending on a high note probably helps them as they go into this homestand. So hopefully, at the very least, they'll play some entertaining basketball. I know a lot of people are rooting for them to lose that are the fan base. And I totally understand that. But you still want them to show some signs, and they showed some signs in that game.
Yeah, that's good. You want, like I said earlier, wins are not bad like people like to pretend they are when they're tanking. You can win a random game every once in a while.
Right. I mean, you don't have, and again, like as you kind of, it's always important to know, this is not the NFL. You're not guaranteed the number one pick if you finish with the worst record. It's still a lottery. It's a weighted lottery, so you want to have more ping pong balls, but
well, this is the year to be the worst.
This is the one, and then it flies out.
Stupid change.
It's still, I mean, even after this year, though, it's still a lottery. Like, it's not like you're not guaranteed anything. It's
ridiculously dumb change. If anything, there will be more teams who tank.
Agree, and that's a whole other podcast for another time. But the Hawks are all in for this year. They're going to need to hit this pick, so plenty of time to talk about that, but. Anyway, well, thanks, Chris, for catching me up on all this stuff, man. I know it's an interesting topic that not everybody wants to talk about, but it felt like it was time to check it on the list and the race for ping pong balls at some point in time because, you know, for better or worse, at least half, if not more than half of the fan base of the Hawks is monitoring this stuff closely. So we'll keep an eye on it, and I appreciate you helping me out with that.
No problem.
Plug anything you want, my man. I mean, you're doing a lot of stuff. We talked about this before. You've been a busy man lately, so plug anything you'd like.
I just wrote an article about how the Celtics and Warriors are the NBA's two best teams in the third quarter, and the Sixers, who blew a third quarter leads to both of them, which ended up costing them the game when they were up double digits on both those teams, are one of the NBA's worst teams in that. I think it's kind of interesting. Third quarter, it's kind of a quarter that a lot of people just kind of don't pay attention to. I call it the boring quarter because the first quarter is exciting, the second quarter is exciting, then you kind of fall asleep in the third quarter, and then you wake up for the fourth. But the third quarter is kind of important. If you look at the third quarter net rating, most of the teams that are towards the bottom are considered bad teams. And then you look at the Thunder and you wonder, maybe the Thunder aren't as good as the record shows.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world. But yeah, go read that. Follow Chris on Twitter. Do all that fun stuff. Check out CBS Sports, the mothership, so they say. And yeah, follow Chris. He's good.
I'm not that good, but okay.
All right, man.
Go Jaguars.
Yeah, go Jags over the weekend, and we'll be rooting for you. You know, I'm always on your side with the Jags, so I always appreciate that.
You were on the bandwagon in the picks early. You were there.
I for better or worse, I was ahead of the game on the Jaguars.
You were a fool, but you were there.
I was a fool. All right. As for everybody else, I will not have a podcast over the weekend unless something crazy happens. Hawks do play on Friday, but I am traveling, so we'll probably not have a podcast till next week. But you know, if something happens in a trade, we'll do an emergency pod from wherever I happen to be. And until then, please subscribe, do all that fun stuff. Follow Chris, follow me on Twitter, do all that fun stuff. We'll see you guys next week.